This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
I'm thankful this morning. I'm thankful for an awful lot of things. I'm thankful to be healthy. I'm thankful for the fact that our work week is about to end. I'll have a little bit of a holiday later. I'm also thankful that Pete Carroll listened to reason and decided to let the Seahawks offense open things up a little bit earlier in games. It is Danny and Gallant this morning. We got Michael Bumpus in with us. And Mike, if I was going to say the one thing that I'm thankful for in this Seahawks season, it's been the strategic shift that I think Pete Carroll has made a very rational choice about what his team's strength is, the way it should play, and it doesn't necessarily conform to the way he'd prefer games to play, but they've got a better shot trying to build bigger leads early in games and letting your quarterback throw the ball early and often in football games.
That's the thing. You're right, Dan. If you're trying to build a lead, you don't do that by running the ball 15 times in the first quarter in the first half. That style of football is okay. It works. But if you're trying to get out in front of things, you have to throw the football. Why not throw the football when you have Russell Wilson? Me, I am thankful for the humbleness in this wide receiver room, because it's easy to look at DK and say, this young man is coming in, he's taking snaps, he's taking shine. But I don't feel that. You got Tyler Lockett, one of the most mature young men I've ever met. You got David Moore, who understands his role. Everyone's like, look, okay, it's going to be DK or Lockett on any given day. DK is going to get more love just because he's bigger, faster, and stronger. But it seems like there's some kumbaya going on in that room, and that is essential if you want to throw the football like we talked about and get big leads.
That's a good point, because it's the quarterback is part of it, but you've got to have, and the Seahawks do have the horsepower to do it with their receivers. But unlike a running back where you can say, hey, we want to get this guy 15 carries, it's real hard to say in a game, even like we want to make sure we get this guy 9 targets and this guy 6 targets, because the game doesn't always work like that. And you have to have some patience. And you've got, in one case, Tyler Lockett, who's been, I would consider that he's been an underrated star, right? He's been an incredibly productive deep threat in this league that people don't realize is a good number one receiver. And then you've got DK Metcalf, who is an emerging stud and who people are talking about as the next. That's a pretty difficult balance to strike, with one guy who feels he's in his prime and the other guy who feels he's coming into his own. And it'd be real easy to see one of those guys get their feelings out of whack about that.
Yeah, it'd be easy. It'd be easy for Tyler Lockett to say, look, man, it's my time to shine. Doug Baldwin's been gone for a few years. I'm developing to a number one receiver, and you draft this kid, and now he's getting the shine. I'm looking at these teams. Lockett can be the number one receiver for Detroit, for Chicago, for Denver, for Jacksonville, for the Washington football team. Like, he's no scrub. He's a legit number one receiver. So the fact that there's no animosity there, they're just showing up to work and they're getting it done. And you're right, for a receiver to ball out, so many things have to happen, right? The snap has to go right. The quarterback has to get the ball, read the defense. It has to go your way. You're dependent on a lot of people for your job to do right. For you to do your job right, you're depending on a lot of people. And I like it, man. One week can be DK, one week can be Lockett, and then sprinkle a little Demo with his big plays down late in the game. It's a nice recipe, man. I like it.
What's the key to not having that receiver room get out of whack? What's the key? Is it a lack of ego? Because it doesn't, I don't think I would describe either DK Metcalf nor Tyler Lockett as lacking confidence or like assuredness about their own skills. What do you think about the relationship between these guys allows it to work?
It is a lack of ego. It's how you're raised, man. It's a lot of stuff. Because receivers, let's be real, I'm a receiver. We are divas. We want the football. We're flashy. We're marketable. We're going to do things to grab attention. And you're not seeing that. Now, you have to have an ego to play this game. You got to be borderline cocky, if not cocky, in a hole. But you also have to understand that one receiver is not going to win a ball game. One football player in the NFL in general is not going to win a ball game. You can say, oh, the quarterback won or lost the game. How was his protection? What does defense do for him? Was the receivers dropping the football? It takes a village. So to understand that will allow these guys to get along. And then both of them are eating. It's not like they're looking at each other like, man, you got 30 more targets than me. No, it's pretty even with their targets. So it's working out.
It is even, and they've kind of toggled back and forth because what was it? There's the first Arizona game where I think DK got four passes. Tyler in that game, I think he caught 12 for 200 yards, and they kind of gone back and forth where each had big games. And there's times where both have done damage. And this pass game would have been one of those if DK holds on to that one cross, that the slant that he dropped, or the one in the end zone. But that... Why are receivers Divas? Like, why? Because it is two positions that tend to be the loudest and most demonstrative. It's the wide receivers, and it's the men who cover them in the corners. I always wonder whether it was because they're so far away from the ball that they've got to have their own drama going on. Why does it tend to be the wide receivers who have such outsized personalities, whether it's Terrell Owens or Ocho Cinco, or, I mean, most recently you have Antonio Brown. Why are they the ones that tend to go off the deep end?
You know, Danny, I think at least a part of it is that you can be the most flashy with your play as a receiver. You think about a route, all the moves you can do, you get to the top, you go and grab the football. You're asked to do a lot as a receiver. You're on the outside. And again, you're depending on so many people for you to do your job. So once you get the football, it's like, finally, it's me, let's go. And you score touchdowns. There's a lot of things that go on. Receivers are very complex people. They want
to tell
me
they're like they're like onions. They've got a lot of layers. Like, don't keep from
Shrek. Lots of layers, Daddy. Lots of layers. And we're marketable. You know, we can relate to like the average. I'm 5'11". I made it to the league. Dudes can look at me and be like, man, you know, that's like a guy walking down the street. Yeah, we're average size guys. Some of us, you get the DKs or whatnot. And we're marketable, man. We got the smile. We got the swag. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes into that, Danny.
I will say this. I think the most stereotypical wide receiver behavior that I've ever seen was Nate Burleson, who brought a squirt bottle of Febreze to squirt inside his pads because he didn't like how they smelled. It's like he had in the locker room, he would administer Febreze to his pads before he put them on because he wanted them to smell nice. Wide receivers always take best care of their skin. They're always the neatest, most tidy people in the locker room. They are the most put together, but they're finicky. They're a little finicky.
Yeah, I learned a lot in a Seahawk locker room. My receiving corps was Nate Burleson, who you mentioned, Deion Branch, who drove a Bentley around, was super clean. You got Bobby Engram, the OG, who was super clean, put together. Ben Obamadu, I mean, my group, man, I learned a lot about how to be an NFL receiver. Not about football, just how to carry yourself and how to be marketable. So those guys put me on a lot of game.
It's Danny and Gallant. We do have good news for you because the Professor John Clayton, he's going to be with us in just about 8 minutes from now. He continues on 710 ESPN Seattle. We're all really grateful and excited about that. He'll be with us every morning, 7:15, then with Wyman and Bob every afternoon at 4. And you can keep following John's work online at 710sports.com. This is also one of my favorite days to do a radio show. And it's been that way since I started working at 710 ESPN Seattle. I love this Wednesday before Thanksgiving. The holidays are about to start. Football's in full swing. And Wednesday's usually the day where everybody is leaning into that weekend. It's a little different this year. And I want to acknowledge that because I am really looking forward to the show. I'm excited to do it here with Michael Bumpus and DJ Wilder. My family's not, I'm not traveling to Yosemite. I usually do. My dad, I've got an insanely big family on my dad's side. He had 8 brothers and sisters. I've got like 36 first cousins. We usually get together in Yosemite. I think last year we had 85 people there and stay in different cabins. I'm not doing that this year, and I'm missing that. And I think a lot of people, whether you are having people over or you're not, and this isn't about whether that's what you should do, it's a different holiday. And I want to acknowledge that I think everybody's having a different, they're at a different place with Thanksgiving. I am thankful for everybody listening here. I'm thankful to be healthy, thankful to be working with you, Bump, and I am thankful to be doing the show today. This is one of the days that I enjoy doing radio the most.
Yeah, man, I tweeted last night. I'm super thankful. Anyone who's given me an opportunity, the first person put a football in my hand, Washington State University, for giving me an opportunity to get an education and play football, is where I met my wife. Aaron Levine. Big ups to Aaron Levine. He is the first person to reach out to me and even get me into this media thing. He goes, look, you want to do Apple Cup? I came and I did Apple Cup. 3 years later, I get a shot with the Hogs. Bonneville hits me up. I'm I wake up sometimes in the morning. I'm like, how did I fall into this? Like, I'm super thankful for every opportunity I've gotten, anyone who's helped me along the way. And days like this are days where you can really reflect and appreciate.
All right. We're going to have a fun time this afternoon or this morning. Stay with you through 11 o'clock, Danny and Gallant until 10, and then we'll step in for Paul Gallant in that next hour. Right now, it's time to tell you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
Utah's going to play Washington on Saturday. Do you feel bad for BYU? Poor BYU. They messed up. They could have said, yeah, we want to play Washington, raised their hand, and then when Utah became available, the Pac-12 would have stepped in and said, sorry, Huskies, you've got to go play the Utes, and BYU could have said, oh, man, we really wanted to play anyone, anywhere, anytime, and not have actually had to play the team that beat you a combined score of 80-26. Instead, everybody knows BYU is a fraud. They don't even get the chance to beat Washington and show how good they are. Washington, Utah, Saturday night at 7:30. I'm excited to see the Huskies play again.
Yep, I am. And that's a good matchup. I like that Utah-Washington game. But BYU, you could have faked the funk. You could have walked around with your chest out. Yep. Like, yeah, we're ready. But that's what you get. That's why you're number 14 now instead of number 9 or 8 like you were a couple days ago. Man, you got to step up to the challenge. But I'm not mad at this matchup. UW-Utah has been a good game these past 4 years. Utah with that great defense. UW with a great defense. They have a pro-style offense now. Dylan Morris looks sharp. Big ups to his trainer, Lavelle Durant. I mean, hey, football on Saturday. Can't beat that.
Now, if there's a steel cage match involving Pac-12 coaches, Kyle Whittingham of Utah is the favorite, right? Like, that guy all looks day. Big and mean. Big yeah. and mean. They produce some DBs, too. Did you see the Julian Blackman?
Yeah.
Julian Blackman is a baller for Indianapolis Colts. Just came off the injury. Oh, he looked good.
What to watch for.
Seahawks resumed practice on Tuesday. Now, they didn't have to give us a practice report. They didn't have to tell us who worked out yet, but Pete Carroll was a nice guy, and he let us know that Chris Carson and Shaquille Griffin, they were out there on the field. Here's the coach.
They did get out there today, yeah, and got to work. You know, they were doing all the regular practice stuff today, so it's a good sign.
That's great. We need both of these guys, especially Carson, right? Carson's the one that's more important out of the two?
Yeah, I would say so. Even though Carlos Hyde played well last game. And Pete's telling us because Pete is excited. He's like, I'm getting my team back. I'm getting my running back. I'm getting my corner. He's excited just like we are. He wants to let the 12s know, like, look, again, he's been preaching it all year. This team is getting better. Once we get healthy, we'll be fine. That's what we're seeing. Now I want to see how they use 32 and Hyde back there. Are they going to just give Carson the load and say, look, here you go. You run with it. I think they sprinkle both guys in. And then the same thing with Shaq. Who are you taking out? Taking out DJ? You taking out Flowers? Good problems to have when you have your backups playing well, your starters are getting healthy, and you have to make tough decisions.
It's always hard. I always cringe when I'll find myself thinking, man, the Seahawks are about to get healthy. It's a brutal sport. You don't know who's going to get hurt. Right now, they're going to wonder about Brandon Schell and how he's going to be available this week. You don't know, but they are about to get a bunch of players back. I don't know how many they'll lose in the interim, but they're about to get a bunch of players back. And it starts with these guys, Chris Carson, Shaquille Griffin. Ethan Posick is also going to be back on the field. Rashad Penny's probably in the next couple weeks. Like, we could see an influx of talent here, which would be a big boost.
It's time to go on a run. You got 4 games. You should win. Let's get it.
What to watch for.
People think I don't like soccer, and this is incorrect. I like soccer. I just like making fun of soccer more than I like soccer. And now that I've gotten that out of the way, I want to say with no joke, the Seattle Sounders beat LAFC 3-1 last night. They had goals from their big three of Nico Ladero, Jordan Morris, Raul Ruiz Diaz. Go 3-1. They now advance. They're going to play FC Dallas December 1st in the Western Conference semifinal.
Man, Morris, the local kid from Seattle, went to Mercer Island. He actually should have had a hat trick, man. He had two opportunities that he missed. Came up clutch in the end. 12th time in a row that this team has been to the playoffs. That's the MLS record. Low-key, the Sounders are the most successful franchise in the MLS when it comes to this playoff appearances. You got other guys with MLS Cup championships. But nice to see the Sounders doing their thing. Rui Diaz had a nice half volley that he put in the back of the net. Nice to watch. We do like soccer here on 710,
yes.
All right?
Yes,
let's show some love to the community.
Yeah, Michael Bumpus, a prominent young soccer player before he decided that it was going to make his money catching balls with his hands.
Yeah.
It is time for our morning drive now. We're going to bring in the professor, John Clayton. It's brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by DivorceLawyersForMen.com.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
We heard anything recently from Baltimore? Because last we heard, they've had a total of 5 players, 4 staff members test positive. They're waiting to see if they get any more positive tests today. And as far as we know, the game tomorrow night against Pittsburgh has not been called off.
No, it's not going to get called off. And I don't even think it's going to be delayed because it's still a matter. Now, they got to go through this round of testing. We haven't heard of any new tests that were positive today. But the issue right now is, are they flying out tonight or are they flying out tomorrow? There was some consideration to fly out on Thursday morning as opposed to Wednesday night. But now they're flying to try to do it. But they're in big trouble for this game because, you know, here they are. They won't have Mark Ingram at running back. They won't have J.K. Dobbins at running back. They won't have Brandon Williams at defensive lineman. Probably won't have Calais Campbell. And so they're going to not be able to run the ball, not be able to stop the run. And, you know, they go in undermanned right now with a Steeler team that's undefeated. So I think this is going to be very tough. And plus, you know, as you know, not being able to do much as far as practice, how do you, of course, they play Pittsburgh twice a year, so they know him pretty well. But, yeah, this is a bad situation for Baltimore.
John, I was watching ESPN, and Ryan Clark has the Rams in his power five or power rankings, his top five at number 4, the Raiders at 5, no Seattle Seahawks. Do you agree with this?
Well, for now, yeah, because I know when I did my AP vote, I had to put the Rams above the Seahawks because the Rams beat the Seahawks, and they have the same record. And so, in fact, you can start to make the argument, depending on how you feel about New Orleans with Taysom Hill, that you could put the Rams as a number 1 seed and in the NFC because, you know, they've got a top 2 defense. They've got a good enough offense. Jared Goff's good enough. They can run the football, and right now they look great. Now, what has to happen is that it's kind of like the argument, who's the best team in the AFC? Well, you have to say it's Pittsburgh because they're undefeated, but also I still think it's Kansas City. And so as this all sorts out, by the end, I think it's going to be Seattle over the Rams because, again, in 4 weeks, you know, the Seahawks should be 11-3 going against the Rams, and the Rams have some tough games. They have to play New England. You know, they have some difficult games to play. They also have another game against Arizona. So they could lose a game or two, and that would change things. But right now, I think you can start to make the argument that the Rams today, this week, week 12, could be number 1.
We talk about different things we're thankful for. I'm thankful that the Rams have Jared Goff as their quarterback because I feel like he's the handicap that is placed on Sean McVay, kind of like how you give a horse extra weight to carry when they're dominant. Like that's that McVay, because if McVay had a really good quarterback, I'm not sure how fair this would be, but it was like how Shaq couldn't shoot free throws, right? Like if Shaq had been a 90% free throw shooter, that's a wrap. Like that's just not even fair. And so this is what they've done. Like Sean McVay, you're extremely smart, exceptionally smart. And you're going to have a quarterback who kind of tends to look like a deer in the headlights whenever there's pressure on you. I appreciate that. I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, and I think the thing that's interesting is that you can see there is a formula to be able to really make him look bad. You saw it in the Super Bowl when he played New England. You saw it in the Miami game a couple weeks ago when Brian Flores, who was a defensive coordinator of the Patriots, you know, put 6-man fronts up there against him, blitzed him, have defensive linemen drop back, and he made the 4 turnovers in that game. So there is a formula there. It's just how much you want to copy the formula because it's so different than anything you're going to do in a normal week. And so, yeah, that could be an issue. But, you know, as defensive coaches eventually do, they start figuring things out and what you can do, and offensive coaches have to find a way to be able to beat that.
John, I want to believe in the Cleveland Browns so bad. There's something about Baker Mayfield that I like. You know, Odell Beckham, Landry, the receiver's flashy. They're 7-3 right now. They have some tough games coming up. They play the Ravens and the Steelers again. Where do you think this team ends up at the end of the year?
Kind of like I thought they were at the beginning of the year. I thought they'd be a wild card team. So the question, I think they can maybe get to 10 wins, and that should be able to put them in. You know, I think the one thing, you know they're good on defense, and certainly it doesn't help that they won't have Myles Garrett. They didn't have him last week, probably won't have him this week because of a positive COVID test. But I think you can watch that Kevin Stefanski has done as a really good job. I mean, he's come in there. He runs the football. I mean, he has a great running back core right now because Nick Chubb is back. And, you know, they can – Kareem Hunt is a Pro Bowl caliber running back. And so he does a great job running the football, makes it easier for Baker Mayfield, and the defense is good enough to be able to win some games. So, yeah, they don't maybe match up against some of the better teams. I mean, you know, they've already lost to Baltimore. They already lost to Pittsburgh. You can see that they lost to the Raiders. But I think that this is a wild card playoff team. Will they do well in the playoffs? Probably not. They'll probably get bounced out the first round. But I think they can make the playoffs.
John, one of the teams that we're forced to watch tomorrow, because we are each and every year, it's like a hostage situation with the Detroit Lions. They were just shut out 20-0 by Carolina, which didn't even have its starting quarterback. They were starting with the XFL guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was their
PJ Walker,
starting quarterback?
Yeah.
Are they gonna clear the decks? Do you think both Quinn and Matt Patricia are gone this offseason?
I think so, because you can just see it just hasn't worked. I mean, here was Jim Caldwell sitting there taking the team to 9-7 records.
Yep.
And they let him go because they said, well, he didn't win against winning teams. I think he had only 5 wins in his career in Detroit against winning teams. But then you look at Patricia, and he's only won 3. And so it's like, oh, that was a real good improvement. And Patricia, you know, you can see that the players have not got along with him. They don't necessarily like him, respect him. He's a defensive coach, and they can't win games on defense. I mean, they're terrible on defense. Quinn, I mean, he's traded away players like Darius Slay and, you know, all these good players. I mean, Damon Snacks Harrison hated it there. I mean, you can see the players that have come here to Seattle. And so in the end, I think that they're both gone at the end of the year. Because, again, the mandate was made by ownership that you've got to try to do better this year, and they've done worse.
John, where are you at with the let Russ Cook situation? Last week we saw Carlos Hyde get 75 yards and a touchdown. You have Chris Carson, looks like he's going to play this week. Do you think they continue along the offensive path they've been on, or do you think they get back to the running days?
They got to get back to the running days. I mean, again, it's nice to be able to put a little bit more in the first couple quarters and that, to maybe get a little bit of a mix in there, but they need to run the football, because, you know, this is say what you want, the Eagles are a bad football team, particularly on offense, but they have a lot of good talent on defense. And what you don't want to do is, you know, go to Philadelphia, lose that game because you're getting turnovers. I mean, they've got to minimize turnovers, because the one thing that, you know, Carson Wentz will give it up. I mean, he's had 12 interceptions, he's been sacked 40 times, he's got 5 fumbles, and, you know, Russell just has to go there and win the turnover battle and win the game. So I think the running game is going to be vital for that.
I saw that Big Bird's going to get the start down in Jacksonville. They're putting Mike Glennon out there.
I was
shocked at that. So is Luton hurt, or did they just decide the rookie out of Oregon State wasn't good enough to keep the job?
No, they were hurt as a team having Luton out there because he was so bad.
I mean, it's not good.
Not good, no. I mean, he was just horrible in the game with mistakes and everything else. And so, no, it was a matter that, you know, they probably should have pulled him and not had him finish the game because he was that bad. But, you know, looks like even though probably it's going to cost the GM, David Caldwell his job, and also cost the coach, Doug Marone, his job, you know, it's not like they're tanking, but they're pretty tanked.
Yeah, they are. Do you think that is it basically a race to the bottom to see who chooses Trevor Lawrence between them and the Jets?
Yeah, I would say so. Although I find it hard for you can see many wins at all for the Jets. I mean, they are just so bad, and they have a tougher closing schedule. So you put all that together, I mean, they may win one game, but you go back a couple years ago when, you know, it was almost back-to-back winless seasons for the Cleveland Browns.
Yep, 1-31.
What was the one team that saved them? And that was the, at that time, San Diego Chargers. And now they played the Chargers last week, and the Chargers won. So what does that say?
Yeah, that says that the Jets might be headed straight for the bottom of the tank. John, we always appreciate it. We're really thankful that you're back with us. And I want to say I hope you and Pat have an awesome holiday.
Yeah, I hope everybody has a great holiday. I hope you enjoy Thanksgiving. And, of course, don't forget, I'll be back 8 to 11 on Saturday.
That's right, the triumphant return of the John Clayton Show. Thank you so much, Professor.
Okay, thanks.
All right, coming up next, Pete Carroll. He gave us a little more insight than I expected. On a day he could have kept everything close to the vest, not told us anything about injuries, he gave us some hints about who's going to play and who's going to not on Monday in Philadelphia. We'll parse Pete next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Michael Bumpus is in with us today, as he has been all week. It's been a blast to work with Bump. Really, really fun sitting alongside him. And we're now going to take you inside. We've already heard Chris Carson and Shaquille Griffin did practice. I would expect that Carson is more likely to play than Griffin, though Griffin's going to have a full week of work, so I think he's got a pretty good shot to play. So that's the insight between those two. But let's read between the lines and try to figure out what Pete's saying. We do this better than anybody else. It is our patented Pete parsing system.
Do you struggle trying to understand what Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll has to say?
The answer to that question is yes.
Well, you're in luck. Introducing Pete Parsing, a revolutionary new software.
That's like a no answer right there.
By listening just 10 minutes a day, you'll be able to understand what's going through the mind of a national championship and Super Bowl winning head coach. And heck, you might even start talking like him.
Always competing. Always competing.
Danny and Gallant proudly present Parsing Pete.
You're familiar with this, Bump, right? We listen to the coach who he never throws around or is hesitant to throw words around. He just doesn't always tell you exactly what's going on. Sometimes it takes a little conjecture. We need a little forecast. So let's start here. He was talking about three players who were injured in this past game: Brandon Schell, Bo Scarborough, and Travis Homer. Here's Pete's updates.
Brandon, he's still hobbling a little bit. It's going to be a close call to the game. I can't tell you what's going to happen now, but he needs every day. Tough guy, big, strong guy. Sometimes they can handle this a little bit better than other guys. We'll see. So it's really day-to-day with him. And then Bo needs surgery. He tore his hamstring in a way that he needs surgery. Travis, he's really sore. He has a little something going on in his wrist that we have to take some time for. I don't know that it's extended weeks, but right now we got to get him where he can throw it in there and block and do the things he needs to do.
All right. What's your best crack at that, Bump? What would you say are any of those three guys? We know Scarborough's, he's going to go on injured reserve. That was brutal, man. He basically got forced into the splits. Oh,
yeah.
Just awful.
That was tough. I'm getting Scarborough, we know he's gone. Mm-hmm. Other two, day to day, we shall see. But I think they're going to be out there. That's what I got from that. What'd you get?
I don't think we're seeing Schell. I think Schell's got the better chance between he and Homer. I would guess we're not going to see Schell. That they'll tell us he hasn't practiced at all when they get to Saturday and they leave for Philly, and then he won't go on the trip. And then we'll hear that he's not going to play once they get there. And I think Homer will be out. I think that this is going to be a couple weeks. Maybe there's something that has happened in his hand/wrist. I don't know if it's a broken bone. At the very least, it's something they're going to need some time. He's probably going to have to play with a cast. That would be my inference. Let's move ahead, because one guy that we know is not going to be there is Greg Olsen. He's been placed on injured reserve. He's probably not going to play again in the regular season. Pete Carroll told us his team's plans at tight end.
Yeah, Colby's going right into the rotation. We're going to just throw him in there. And, to make sure that we're playing, everybody's fresh and all of that, he's going to just play. So I'm not going to hesitate there.
You're going to have Colby Parkinson. He's a rookie out of Stanford. What role does he play in this receiving group, Bump?
I'm excited to see him. At Stanford, I loved his game. Finally going to get to see him go to work. He's the pass catcher. They're going to ask him to block, but he is here to catch the rock, work the seams. Man, I'm excited to hear that he's going to be thrown in there. If he's being thrown in there, that means at least mentally he understands what's going on. He understands the playbook, and Pete is comfortable enough, at least with his alignment assignment, that he's going to go out and attempt to do the right things. Now it's executing. You're more than halfway through the season. This is your first time getting some NFL reps. I'm excited. Kobe's being thrown in there. He's going to get two targets. Two.
Disley will be your end line blocker. He'll be when they have those situations. He's well suited for that. He's also receiving threat as well. Jacob Hollister's gotten a lot of playing time this year, even before Olsen was out. How is Olsen's injury going to impact their ability to use two tight ends, or will it?
I don't think it is. Now, Jacob Hollister is not your prototypical, I'm going to just control this in type of dude. He's serviceable. He can do it. He can get in the way. But I think that's where Colby comes in. I think that's the advantage that Colby has on Jacob, is that he's just bigger. He's got longer arms. He has more leverage. He can really help out when it comes to blocking. But can he do it? He's a rookie. First time he's going to see some NFL action. So right now, I think you can still go with Jacob Hollister. But if you do, you're not running to his side. You're running away from Jacob Hollister's side. You just have him just getting the defensive ends away on the backside of the formation.
He's also a Stanford tight end. And I used to say that that's the position Washington was known for. And it has, through the years, produced a number of really good tight ends. And right now you see Drew Sample in Cincinnati, Disley in Washington. But Stanford's tight ends, like Stanford, is there something to that? Like, this school's really good at producing this position player in the NFL?
I don't know. I mean, Wazoo was quarterback
yes,
in the 90s or something like that. And USC became quarterback U for a little bit. UW, people talk about UW. UW is DBU all day.
Yes.
UW is DBU. Put out some DBs. I don't know what it is. I think it just comes down to who's your best position coach on your staff. So you'll recruit those type of players. I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. I would now say that USC is anti-QBU. Like, they produce overrated QB prospects. Like, they produce the QB prospect you don't want to draft. Like, hey, he's going to go in the first round, but I don't want to take him. Because they have a tendency to not pan out, whether it's Darnold or Leinart or the other guys that have come out of there. Clausen, it's been really since Carson Palmer, hasn't it?
They got to stay out of Orange County. You go to Orange County and get those QBs, man. They privilege, never been hit before. They've had the same O-line for 10 years, and they've been sacked like 3 times. You know, it's too much success over there.
I think that's true. And I think there's, like, I honestly think that because there's this group of, it's about a dozen really big Catholic high schools in Orange County that tend to be these incubators for kind of the test tube quarterback who they've played quarterback since they were 8 years old, and it's all they've done. Mm-hmm. And I think that when they're in high school, they're really polished for high school quarterbacks. So they stand out above everybody, and everybody recruits them and says, oh my gosh, you're going to get this guy, and he's going to come in, he's going to be your starter right away. But they've kind of already, they're closer to maxing out their potential than other guys because they've spent so long just being trained as quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. I think USC quarterbacks peak like 3 quarters through their first year as a starter on college, like whenever that is. Like, that's as good as they get, and they're never going to get any better after that. So it's very strange that those guys just have – they just had it happen with the other kid, right? JT Daniels, the one that looked like the pirate who dressed up like he was Johnny Depp from Pirates of the Caribbean. And he's already out of there. He's left the school because they top out for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think Matt Leinart was the last one. Matt Leinart went to Modern Day. That's OC. So I think after him, it was just downhill from there. But you're right. What is it? They spend so much working on their craft. And then they're protected. You go to these Catholic schools, you're not sacking the quarterback. He doesn't know what a sack feels like. And then you get into some big boy football, and they're like, hold on, man, I can get hurt out here? Like, I can actually go down? So I wish those guys the best, but there's a trend going on. Those OC quarterbacks, man, what's going on down there in the OC?
All right, the last parsing piece that we have relates to the rookie linebacker who's continuing to get playing time and open eyes. Here's Pete Carroll on Jordan Brooks.
He's a really good ball player. He's helping us. The running and hitting part is really what he specializes in. He's a terrific athlete and very explosive. As he continues to learn and just get more accurate, more in command of what he's doing, he's just going to be really, really good. There's nothing to keep him from there. He's instinctive, smart, tough. He's kind of got a real quiet toughness about him, and he's doing a really good job of, you know, being the first pick and being humble and just working hard. So I'm really, really thrilled about that pick and what he contributes to this team.
What are you seeing from Brooks so far and right now at this point of the season?
Man, I see a guy who, one, plays extremely hard and is not afraid to bang. He's not afraid to hit, not afraid to contact. He'll make the wrong decision sometimes, and he'll be right. There's a tackle he made, I want to say, a couple weeks ago. where he went underneath the block instead of going over the top. It was a stretch play. He should have went over the top of the block to kind of force things inside. Went underneath, ran the guy down for like a 2-yard gain, and he was mad. Because he knew, he's like, look, man, I shouldn't have went over the top of that, but was still able to make the play. Jordan Brooks is the future of this defense. I really feel that. When Bobby Wagner and KJ are done, they're going to hand the keys over to Jordan Brooks, and he's going to be ready to go. Physically, when I look at him, he reminds me of Aaron Curry. I remember when Aaron Curry got on the team, and I was on the team at the time, and I'm looking at Aaron Curry. I'm like, how do they make human beings this big and this fast? I think Jordan Brooks physically is an Aaron Curry. Talent-wise, I think he might be a bit better.
It is Danny and Gallant. Michael Bumpus is in with us today. Coming up next, we're going to find out just how much derision Dabo Swinney can pack into the four syllables it takes to say Tallahassee, and a BYU coach is scrambling to cover his team's pride. That's ahead.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
With the way college football has kind of been left up to the conferences and in some respect the schools, this was eventually going to happen. Our doctors don't agree with your doctors, so we're going to be mad at each other. And maybe the surprise is that it took this long before a game, Clemson at Florida State, a game which I was incapable of correctly describing earlier this week. I was all confused. It's Clemson at Florida State. Clemson's there and ready to play. They have a player that underwent a test on Friday morning, got the result that night. They had already traveled to Tallahassee by that point. The player who tested positive is then put into isolation and quarantine, but he's been around all the other players on the team that day. Clemson says, hey, we followed the protocols. As soon as he tested positive, we removed him from sort of the community, the team community. Florida State's doctors say, well, actually, because all these other players were exposed during that trip, we're not going to have our team play. Mike Norvell, who is Florida State's new coach, says, okay, our doctors have made the decision. They don't end up playing. Dabo Swinney, Clemson's coach, is very mad. And we heard from him earlier, and he basically said that COVID wasn't the reason this game was canceled. COVID was the excuse used to cancel this game. Basically saying Florida State didn't want any. They didn't want what we were about to bring. And Florida State, what? They won two games, and they were probably 30-point underdogs.
Yeah. They didn't. They didn't want none of that.
Probably not. Now Dabo had said his piece, and then Mike Norvell came back and said, hey, I'm not a doctor. I'm a football coach. I listen to our medical staff. What it is. Dabo couldn't leave that alone because Dabo yesterday decided, well, first of all, he was asked about his statement that he said that Florida State wanted to forfeit. And he made it clear that he said, I said Florida State. Well, here's what Dabo Swinney had to say.
It's one thing not to agree. You've alleged that you basically said they wanted to forfeit the game. Could you go?
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say they wanted to forfeit the game. Y'all don't listen. I didn't say they wanted to forfeit the game. I said it should be a forfeit. I didn't say they wanted to forfeit the game. Big difference.
Y'all don't listen.
That was really funny when he said, I didn't say they wanted to forfeit. I said they should forfeit. It's like, oh, now we're going to get into the deep semantics of this. Here's where it gets funny. Because he's told about Norvell's quote of saying, I'm not a football coach. Or, I'm not a doctor. I'm a football coach. Here's what Dabo said back.
You know, listen, I'm not really worried much about what they say down there in Tallahassee. That's for sure. You know, I've been in this league 18 years. I've been the head coach here 12. All right. You know, they've had three head coaches in 4 years. So decisions that they make, you know, I'm not going to worry about advice from Tallahassee. I trust the people here, and I trust our doctors 100%.
Shots fired.
Tallahassee.
Tallahassee. 18 years I'm in the game, son. 18 years. Flex on him then, Debo. Dabo. Sorry, Dabo. Sound like Debo.
It is a Debo move. That's my game. You took my COVID protocols. Man. Dabo's being a jerk here. I mean, and he's got that right in some respects because his team has been dominant in Florida State. Probably in all things considered wasn't going out of their way or like straining to like, oh my gosh, we really want. But Dabo's kind of being a jerk here. Like the Miami doctors basically said they made an understandable decision, which is, hey, one of the players on your team tested positive and was around your team the whole day. And I don't think it's in the best interest of our players to go and play a football game against that team. You can debate how much risk those players would have been exposed to, but it's some risk there. And the school said it. And instead, Dabo's like, I don't care what you say in Tallahassee. It's basically like your doctors are dumb.
I mean, they're not wrong in Tallahassee. And I mean, that kid was around other teammates, so there's a chance that the virus could have spread. And Dabo is flexing on him right now. He's like, nah, y'all was scared, which the someone in that organization was like, man, thank goodness we don't have to play those guys. Guaranteed somebody said that. So both sides are right here. And Dabo, I mean, once you've been in the game 18 years, son, 12 years as the head coach, you can talk like that. Nick Saban has a way of talking. Nick Saban, Sweeney, Urban Meyer, those guys are the three who can just say whatever the heck they want to say because they win ball games. They've won ball games. You have to be – now, as an athlete, you have to be borderline cocky. You have to be confident. You have to have that swag about you. Dabo's just, hey, doing what he's supposed to do. I'm here for it, Danny. I like it.
Somebody said I said Miami again. It's Tallahassee. I got to make sure I know it's Tallahassee. Now, BYU's coach, Kalani Sitake, they got the bad news yesterday, BYU did, which BYU's undefeated. They had a tough schedule lined up. They're an independent. They've been an independent since 2011. They had a tough schedule. They had five teams from BCS conferences that they were planning to play, and when all the conferences came out, the Big Ten, Pac-12 said, we're not playing non-conference games. BYU had to scramble. They put together a schedule. They're undefeated, but they were ranked 14th yesterday. And that kind of brought the attention back to, it brought the attention back to why didn't you want to play Washington? Here was Kalani Sitake.
There's this narrative out that we were hiding or ducking or waiting. And that's just not true. It's a false narrative. I want to make sure everybody understands we're not afraid of anybody. We will respect everyone that we play. But there's no fear in this. But it's not anything unique to us. This is what makes college football great. Nobody's afraid of anybody. You know, we're not afraid of Washington. They're not afraid of us. That's why we dedicate our lives to this game.
I do want to give them that. If BYU had said we're going to play and raised their hand, they wouldn't have been able to. Like, they were right about that part of it of you're asking us to commit when you can't fully commit. Like, they're right about that part. Because the Pac-12, Arizona State couldn't play this week because of COVID protocols. So even if on Friday, as soon as Washington called, BYU had said, yes, we want the game, we want to do it, we'll do whatever we can, the Pac-12 would have stepped in and said Washington has to play Utah. But because BYU was like, well, we're not going to commit unless you can commit, we're not going to do this unless you can do this, we're not. And now it looks like you kind of didn't want the game. Washington's going to get to play Utah. BYU is not going to play anybody. They're now going to look to try to schedule games over the next two weekends. And they don't get the tough guy points that they kind of need if we want to play anyone, anywhere, anytime, because they were offered a game and they didn't jump at it.
The same reason why they should have committed or at least say they're going to play UW is the same reason why the NFL wants players to wear masks on the sideline. Perception, optics, right? You had to make it look like you want to do this. You're trying to do the right thing. And BYU, I'll cut you some slack. All right. You thought you were making a move in the polls. You thought you were going to move up and you were going to be maybe what, a top six team and get closer to the college football playoffs. So you didn't want to roll the dice against a team that has smacked you the last 2 years. I understand that. And coach came out and said, look, we're not afraid of anybody. And I don't think he's afraid. I also don't think he makes the final decisions, just like in Tallahassee, where the head coach didn't make the final decision not to play. You got to go to doctors, and there's a process to every decision that's being made. And some of these decisions are above the coach. The coach is there to rally the troops, get them ready to go. So there's some things that affected this. And, you know, BYU, 14 now. Win the rest of your game. See what happens.
Yeah, and here was Kalani Sitake making it clear that they were still preparing and hoping to be able to play Washington.
Yeah, we had an opportunity, you know, this week. We have a lot of respect for Washington and a lot of respect for the Pac-12 conference. And, you know, we practiced yesterday. We had a great practice in hopes of playing Washington. We game planned and did all our meetings last night in hopes of playing Washington. Our players lost money, and our coaches lost money in changing their schedules with the Thanksgiving coming up in the hopes of playing Washington. And so it just didn't work out for whatever reason.
Too bad. Nope. Nobody buys it. Too late. You could have signed up and raised your hand and said, we'll take that game. We'll take that game. Instead, you're like, we'll just wait and see, and then we'll kind of prepare. And now you can't sell that. You cannot sell that we wanted to play that game. You can't. Oh, we totally would have played you now that we can't play you. We totally would have played that team that beat us 80-26 over the past 2 years.
Oh, we were ready. Man, we had a game plan. We had it all figured out, man. We knew they were going to do this and that. Nah, man, too late. It's too late for all that. Too late.
All right. It is Danny Gallant. Michael Bumpus is in with us. We're going to try to figure out why I keep saying that Clemson was going to play Miami when it was Florida State, why I keep saying Florida State was in Miami. We got to get to the bottom of exactly what's going on, because there's some sort of mental tick. We'll also get to Blue 42, because second straight Sunday, no Seahawks game. Where are your eyes going to be? Michael Bumpus will tell you next.